Okay, good morning. Our topic this morning is a very sensitive one. It's a very delicate one. It's one that I pray we do justice to put in context and hopefully provide some clarity from a Torah perspective. Why are we talking about this now? Obviously, it's very much in the news, highlighted by the very public transformation of a formerly well-known athlete. I'm not sure what he's well-known for in more contemporary times. But Bruce Jenner has decided to very publicly undergo this transition, this transformation, to become Caitlyn Jenner. And I must tell you that it, to me, is very tragic and sad, because this topic of transgender is one which deserves to be approached with great sensitivity and with insight and with understanding. But what's happened surrounding this public individual is essentially a circus. It's become a circus. Rather than it be a private, discreet decision that he is making personally in his life, by doing it so publicly, it has invited every opinion under the sun, including people who publicly share their disgust, who make a mockery, who joke, and who laugh about something that should be a sensitive subject. To me, Bruce Jenner has done a disservice to the so-called transgender community, because rather than take a serious subject taken seriously, it's become an entire circus act, with people actually calculating what a fortune he stands to make by undergoing this. One article I read suggested he stands to make, through his book deal and movie deal, through public appearances and the speaking circuit, he stands to make, by going from a man to a woman, $500 million. Which of course makes any non-cynical person say, why is he doing this? For the publicity, for the money, and so on. One thing I can promise you, having had a conversation with more than one transgender individual, nobody undergoes the scrutiny, the focus, sometimes the ridicule, the pain of transgender surgery because of the pursuit of money or fame or fun. So the Bruce Jenner scenario is not the typical scenario. And rather than do a service by bringing the topic to light, in my opinion, it's created a great circus. But this is something we have to be sensitive to, and sensitive to as a Jewish community. I first gave this shiur a few years ago because an individual who no longer lives here, but a member of our community, who at one time wore a black hat and gartel and davened very seriously and is a very sincerely firm individual, decided that he was going to become a woman. And in fact, after, as we'll talk about, living for a year as the opposite gender, which is a mandate, surgeons will not perform the surgery without the individual undergoing what's called RLT, a real life test. The real life test is to live as the opposite gender, socially, to change one's name, to change one's appearance, in order to affirm that that's the lifestyle they are prepared to live. So after a year of living that way, this individual went through that surgery, and there were many questions for our community. The individual, by the way, continued to want to be committed to an observant lifestyle, continued to see now herself as an observant Jew, and wanted to participate in the learning and davening opportunities of our community. And everything I will share from my conversations with her, I have permission to do. She was very grateful with when I first brought that topic to light in that way, and I hope would be with this year, not its conclusions, but hopefully the sensitivity of this year as well. So I had to ask a shaila. Could the individual, a man who had become a woman, continue to daven at our shul? And if the answer is yes, where should he, she sit? Which side of the machitza? I called a prominent posik, one of the Gedolei Hador, who answers shailas from all over the world, all hours of the day and night. And I specifically asked the shaila of this individual, whom I felt every segment of our community would respect his opinion. He's not labeled one direction or the other. He's a universally recognized gadol. I'm not mentioning his name because I don't have his permission. His answer to me, he mentioned to me, before he even told me the answer, he let out a sigh and he said, would you believe that I receive this question from rabbis now 2 to 3 times a week? 2 to 3 times a week, I'm getting calls from around the world with this question. So if we believe, the point I'm trying to make to begin is, if we think that this is a freak show, an anomaly, strange, wacky, it's Bruce Jenner making a circus act, it has no impact on us, the Torah community, then we're putting our head in the sand. This is a new world and it's a new reality we live in. The secular world, the culture of our time is having a big impact, and it will continue to lead to questions that affect us, such as the question I dealt with, and I know from colleagues that are being dealt with in other communities as well. I must tell you, after I gave this shiur that first time, I received a series of emails and I began a correspondence with someone. I don't even know their name and I don't know what community they live in. They made up an email address and they corresponded with me. They described themselves as a person who goes to shul every single day, who goes to the Daf Yomi, whose children are in very intense Jewish educational institutions, who's part of a very firm community, but they are living feeling trapped as a woman in a man's body, and they don't know how much longer they can go on living this lie. And we had a series of correspondence. It exists. It exists in the firm world. It exists in the Torah world. And it's important for us to have a sense of context and perspective to it. To not have a flippant attitude. To not have a dismissive attitude. To not take it lightly or without sensitivity. To not simply dismiss it as the circus act that we're seeing in the media today. And that's the first point I wanted to make. Source number one. This is a point which is made. Shut Beis Avi, Rav Yitzchak Isaac Leibis, the Greidinger Rav. He lived in the 20th century, and in his tshuvas that he deals with this question, the Choshen Mishpat, he says, "Uvdavar she'elasa odas ha'toeva anara manituchim leipach manakeva lezacham zacham manakeva." He says, when it comes to this abominable, this repulsive surgery in which people are changing their gender, ein ani rotzeh lechtov. I don't want to write about it. Ki bechol nafshi ladun b'shikut zeh ve'ein darchi letapel b'inyanim mitoavim mishukatzim ke'ela. My soul is in too much pain to evaluate this issue. And my way is not to get involved in what he considers abominable and despicable questions. He maybe had the luxury of rejecting this as an abominable, despicable outlier, an anomaly. His soul is too pure to address it. But I suggest and submit to you that this is a question which will continue, and if the trajectory that we're on continues, it's a question which will only increase and will only affect literally every segment of even the Torah community. What is the issue of transgender? This is the Wikipedia entry. It's the state of one's gender identity, not matching one's assigned sex. Transgender does not imply any specific form of sexual orientation. Transgender people may identify as heterosexual, homosexual, bisexual, pansexual. You probably don't even know what these words mean. Polysexual, asexual. Some may consider conventional sexual orientation labels inadequate or inapplicable to them. The precise definition for transgender remains in flux, but it includes of relating to or designated a person whose identity does not conform unambiguously to conventional notions of male or female gender roles. People who were assigned a sex usually at birth and based on their genitals, but who feel it's false or incomplete. Non-identification with or non-presentation as the sex one was assigned at birth. There is an issue, a medical issue, that's called ambiguous genitalia. Lo aleinu, none of us should know from it. It exists much more than any of us want to know. There are many families who give birth to a child who have ambiguous genitalia, what halacha talks about androgynous and tumtum. There's a question of having both sets of genitalia, neither, ambiguous, and it is a horrific situation where parents at a young age have to make a determination for that child, what gender they're going to raise them, will they disclose that to the child at any point in their life, and so on and so forth. It is a, someone actually recently told me about a shaila, about a girl who was about to get engaged, and she didn't receive her period, and she never really understood why, and she was deep into the dating career, and felt it was important to investigate, and when the investigation was complete, it was clear that she had an XY chromosome. She actually, while raised and thinking she was a girl her entire life, and prepared dating, and prepared to be married, was not chromosomally a female. This issue of transgender is not that topic. That's a topic that's been discussed in halacha through the ages, because sadly it has existed throughout the ages. It's a medical reality, and it's not the topic that we're going to discuss. Transgender is when there is a clear set, there's clear anatomy of one gender, but the individual feels that they have the spirit, the soul of the other gender. They feel that they are not the gender that they anatomically present. Oh, yeah, the Wikipedia entry gives three versions of it, but the general transgender, the mainstream transgender description, is an individual who feels they have a soul that is a different gender than their anatomy presents. How many transgenders are there in the United States of America? Just to give this some sense of context. So we don't have exact data, because remember, transgender does not include having had the sexual reassignment surgery, SRS. Not every transgender has undergone the surgery. There are individuals who just feel that they're living this lie, that they're living in this world. So some estimates have it as high as 700,000 transgenders in the United States of America. How many have surgery annually? We also don't have detailed statistics, but somewhere it's suggested around 500 surgeries that take place. One of the reasons the surgery doesn't take place is it's not inexpensive. $40,000 to $50,000 to go from a man to a woman, which is less complicated, and these details we will not get into today, and about $75,000 to go from a woman to a man, but it can be prohibitively expensive for many. If you want to understand just how mainstream this is becoming in our culture, know that a few years ago, the law was changed, and Medicare now covers significant portions of the cost of sex reassignment surgery. And if you want to have that in context, health insurance does not cover infertility. Somebody suffering from infertility who wants to needs IVF treatments, also costs $30,000, $40,000, does not get one penny. The law today does not obligate insurance to cover one penny. That's elective. That's your choice. Anatomically, you're struggling to have a child. Physiologically, you have obstacles to having a child. That's your problem, our culture tells us. That's elective to have a child. Therefore, the law does not obligate insurance to cover. But sexual reassignment surgery, the law was changed that Medicare covers portions of the cost, which I think tells you a lot about the priorities and tells you a lot about the world that we are living in. Okay, just to give you again a sense of context. This was from the Huffington Post a few years ago when I first gave the share, 2013. There was a transgender teen named the homecoming queen of her high school in California. She said, "If I win, it would mean that the school recognizes me as the gender I always felt I was," she told the LA Times. "With all the attention, I realized it's bigger than me. I'm doing this for the kids who can't be themselves. I would never have thought in my lifetime," said the teen's mother, "that I would have seen this." She continued, "It's just sad that everyone has to be so judgmental, so hateful, so mean, so negative. I've never done anything to any of these people, and I don't know why they have to be this way when I've done nothing to them. It just hurts so bad. I feel just as much a girl as all of them. Everyone is just so ignorant." And that is the world that we live in. We have no access to it, we're uninformed about it, and we therefore dismiss when we see an individual who is struggling with their gender identity, we dismiss them with words like freak show, strange, bizarre, abomination, and we don't address it. Whatever the Torah view is, which we're going to discuss right now, and it's important to define, but whatever the Torah view is, we cannot use insensitive words and labels, dismissive. We need to understand it in context, but then we need to be exceedingly careful and exceedingly sensitive with our words. Now, to understand this issue, you need to know that those struggling with transgender would give anything in the world not to be. In most cases, they would give anything. They wish, they dream they weren't living with their struggle. The individual in our community described that from 3 years old, he knew that he was a woman living in a man's body. He remembers as early as 3 years old putting on his sister's clothing and his mother giving him a patch telling him we don't do that, and his feeling lost because some reason he was drawn to that. That's who he felt he was. And he spent his lifetime, as he described it, trying to change his soul. He changed his lifetime trying to overcompensate. He looked at his body and it told him he was a male, even though he felt a female, so he joined the Boy Scouts. And he became a Boy Scout leader. So he competed in athletics. He played sports. He did everything he could that would try to transform his soul and his spirit and his feeling to be parallel, to be exactly like his body. And he was not successful, he described. He got married. He had children. He did everything he could to make his soul match his body. And he was unsuccessful. And he was in his 60s when he decided that I can't change my soul. The only way to solve this is to change my body. And he literally came and he said, "If I don't do this, I'm going to kill myself. I can no longer live this way, to live a lie." And I want to put into your imagination for a moment, if that sounds strange to you, assuming sitting here right now, If you're a man, you know you're a man. If your anatomy is a woman, you feel like a woman. Assuming everybody's gender is what their anatomy says. Imagine for a moment you woke up tomorrow after living your life this gender in the body of the other. And you are forced to live that lie, to dress that way, talk that way, carry yourself that way, meet society's expectations for that way, to try to be attracted to the opposite gender. And it was a lie. You would feel bizarre. You would feel out of place. You would feel deceptive. You would feel untrue to yourself. It would be exceedingly, extremely, excruciatingly painful. And this individual and others describe that to continue to live that lie is so painful that they would choose death. And if you look on page 2, source 4, this is an article from NBC News a few years ago, a staggering 41% of transgender people in the United States have attempted to commit suicide. 41%. Look on the bottom, transgender people overwhelmingly say it's worth it after transitioning. Transgender people show a significant decrease in substance abuse problems, depression, and their mental health significantly improves. At least this article argues. Before transition, people struggle with gender dysphoria, the feeling that they're stuck in the wrong body that doesn't match the way they feel on the inside. The 41% suicide rate among transgender people is more than 25 times the rate in the general population, which is 1.6%. Among trans people ages 18 to 44, the attempted rate was 45%. In fact, this individual was learned, and he came to me and he said, "Don't we believe that other than the three cardinal sins, pikuach nefesh v'chai bahem, we do anything to save a life? So if I'm telling you that I either need to have the surgery to be true to who I am, or I'm going to kill myself, it's a matter of pikuach nefesh, shouldn't the surgery be permissible? It's pikuach nefesh, I'm going to kill myself. It's not it's surgery." And we'll see what the prohibitions are in a moment. But it's prohibitions which we do waive in the face of saving a life. Isn't this a circumstance where we say pikuach nefesh should be docha because it's not a violation of the three? When I actually posed that to this posek ador I spoke to, he was not willing to say it's mutter, but he said, "That's taka, a good question, because of pikuach nefesh." But the premise of that question is this incredibly high suicide rate because of those suffering. So we need to know that when we encounter somebody who's identifying as transgender, who's not doing it like Bruce Jenner publicly and in a circus act and to achieve lots of money, but is privately struggling with who they are and the life they're going to live and what their future looks like, we need to understand the pain, the torture. We need to understand the risk of suicide. We need to understand that this is not elective or chosen or wanted or desired, but they would give anything in the world to get rid of it. They would give anything in the world to feel differently. And so we need to have a sense of a sensitivity. This is not a universal approach, this notion of the suicide rate. Where does it really stem from, this feeling of being the opposite gender? There's the last few weeks since, again, it's been in the news, there's a psychiatrist who used to be the head of the department at Johns Hopkins and now is a professor at Johns Hopkins named Paul McHugh. He wrote an article in the Wall Street Journal back in 2014. He's been writing articles more recently. And he argues that the transgendered suffer a disorder of assumption. A disorder of assumption is a psychiatric condition where your perception doesn't match the reality. And he says that's not unique to gender. This disorder of assumption exists in other ways. You have an anorexic or bulimic person who is a thin rail but feels that they are obese, and they therefore are manipulating their eating habits or forcing themselves to purge because they look in the mirror, or their self-perception is that they're obese even when in fact they're malnourished. That's an example of a disorder of assumption. And so he argues that transgender is a psychiatric disorder. It's not a reality of a female soul in a male body or a male soul in a female body. It's not something that we should be benign to or that we should be agnostic to. But it's something he holds which is a disorder, and it requires treatment and needs to be put in the proper context. And he's not, this is a prominent psychiatrist who's written many books and many peer-reviewed papers, a person of prominence and a person of respect. He brings evidence by the fact that he quotes a study from Vanderbilt University in London's Portman Clinic that 70 to 80% of those who describe the transgender feeling spontaneously lose those feelings with time. if you don't have the surgery, 70 to 80% of those who describe the transgender feeling spontaneously lose it with time. Some 25% had persistent feelings, but what differentiates those individuals remains to be, he said, in the research discerned. There was a long-term study done in Sweden in 2011, 30 years that followed 324 people who had sex reassignment surgery, and the study revealed that beginning 10 years after the surgery, the transgendered began to experience increasing mental difficulties. Their suicide mortality rose almost 20-fold, comparable to non-transgender population. So again, the jury's out. At least one prominent psychiatrist believes that transgender is a psychiatric condition. It's a condition of assumption. It's a disorder of assumption where your perception doesn't match reality. The answer, the treatment, is not to make the reality match your faulty perception. The answer is to treat, to bring your perception in line with the reality. That is his approach. And the question I want to deal with this morning is, what's the Torah approach? If this is increasing in society, if this is going to increase in our world, what is the Torah approach? Firstly, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world with two genders. Any attempt to blur those lines and say, and this is another thing we're seeing in our society, right? Gender-neutral bathrooms, you're seeing individuals, this is apparently growing on college campuses. Josh, I don't know if you've seen this. Apparently on college campuses you have young people saying, I refuse to be identified as either a man or a woman. I'm post-sexual, I don't know what the term is. But I refuse to be locked into this box. I refuse to be locked into a gender. I'm post-gender. That is entirely contrary to a Torah view. According to the Torah and the sources I'll show you right now, God, by design, created a world with masculinity and femininity. He created a world with gender differences. And the balance of masculinity and femininity, the balance of male and female, is necessary to the equilibrium of the world. And there's nothing noble about trying to erase or blur those differences and suggest that I'm not defined by my sexuality, that there's no difference between male and female, that we're post-sexual. First of all, every time you take a shower or get undressed, you are reminded of those differences. Our anatomy and our gender remind us of those differences. Babies could not be born if not for the collaboration of those differences, which is, you know, an interesting question. Bruce Jenner says he has always felt like a woman, and yet he is the father of children. You cannot have fathered children without at one point having been a male. But the Torah clearly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God the Almighty, clearly created a world with the presence and the importance, the significance of masculinity and femininity. Our job is not to blur those lines, but it's to better encourage and promote not one or one over the other, but to promote equally both. To promote what is masculinity, what is the Torah definition of femininity, and both are indispensable to the equilibrium of our family life, of our communities, and of the world that we live in. Torah says in the creation of the world, Zacharu nekeva baraosam, male and female, he created them. There's a component of male and a component of female. What does it mean in the same person? He created both. So the Medrash of Bereishis Rabba tells us, source number 6, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah ben Elazar, B'sha Shebar HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Adam HaRishon, Androgynous Baro. This is not well known. People think God created man, and then where did woman come from? The rib. God extracted the rib of man and made a woman. Vayiven es hatzela. But it's not true. The Medrash tells us explicitly, God didn't create man and extract woman from man. God created one androgynous figure that was comprised of both man and woman, and when it was time to introduce the genders, he split that one into two. But the original was neither male or female. The original was an androgynous figure that had both components, and then God split them in two. You see this explicitly in the Gemara Brachos Samach Aleph, source 7. Va'even Hashem Hazukim Esatzela, HaKadosh Baruch Hu built the side that he had taken. Rabbi Shmuel Achad Amar Partzav, Achad Amar Zanav. They disputed. One said the side referred to the figure. Man was created a double figure, one male and one female. God fashioned Eve with the female figure. And one said it was the tail. They were one figure that became separated, not one extracted from the other. The Rav has a magnificent insight. This comes from the Rav, Rabbi Soloveitchik's Chumash Mesoras HaRav, originally from Drushas HaRav, the Rav's Drushas. And the Rav said the following. Male, the verse describes, B'tzelem Elokim bara uso, Zachar nekeva bara usam. In the image of God, He created him, male and female, He created them. So which is it? Did God create one, or did He create both with male and female to it? And the Rav says so magnificently, male and female in this context are to be taken not only in a physiological sense, but also in a spiritual, metaphysical one. Every soul consists of a spiritual androgyny, a male and female persona. Man both influences and is influenced. He is both giver and receiver. Only in the biological world is man exclusively male or female. In the spiritual world, every individual carries both traits, and only through the development of both the Dukhra and the Nukva perspectives can individuals attain their full spiritual potential. In other words, every human being has masculinity and femininity. Men, most often, are more masculine, but they have a feminine side. Women, most often, are more feminine, but they have a masculine side. There are also outliers. Just like on the whole, men are taller than women, but you will find a very tall woman who's taller than most men. Men generally have more masculinity, but you'll find a man with femininity. Just like you'll find women have more femininity, but you could have a very tall woman who's taller than most men. You could have a woman who has more masculinity. Says the Rav, having both the masculine and feminine qualities, which we're not going to take the time now to define, but the Torah has clear views of what are masculine and what are feminine qualities, giver, receiver, and so on. All human beings have both qualities, while we might have one more than the other. And that's what the Rav says the Torah means, that anatomically we are locked into one, but spiritually we have both. And part of, by the way, the spiritual pursuit is to be in touch, to be comfortable being in touch with both. A lot of people have dysfunction because they're so uncomfortable, men having any feminine side, women having any masculine side. We should promote our dominant feature, but we should acknowledge and be comfortable with having both qualities. The Rav writes, the blessing that God bestowed on man during creation operates in both the spiritual metaphysical realm as well as in the physical realm. Actualizing the potential of Dukhra V'Nukva is the greatest and most exalted of blessings. One should find that balance. We have both. The Kuzari Rav Yehuda Halevi writes, the author thus stated that there is no difference between the formations of the male and female except for the visibility of some organs in the one and the concealment of some in the other. Rav Yehuda Halevi says that the male and female brain are the same. The male and female soul are the same. Physiologically we have differences, but we are comprised, or we are designed, the same. The Gemara in Ksubas has a similar lashon, Daf Samach Dalet, source number 10. Says the Gemara, Davar Acher, Ze Yitzro Mi Bechutz, Vezu Yitzro Mi Bifnim. Men have external anatomy, women have internal anatomy, but at the core, the anatomy, the pressure points, work very similarly. There's a lot of commonality between men and women. And with all that commonality, there is important difference. And that's this Gemara in Baba Basra that I was alluding to. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Kol ma shebara kadosh baruch hu ba'olamo, zachar unikeva bra'am. Everything God created in the world, He created male and female. Everything. The animal kingdom, in the world of vegetation. I can't say I'm an expert, but I understand in plant life, there's male and female. In the world of hardware, the tools that we use, screwdrivers can be described as the male and female based on the type of tool that you're using. In everything in God's world, there's male and female. There's masculinity and there's femininity. And the Gemara here in Baba Basra is making a very clear statement that our responsibility, a Torah hashkafa view of life, is not to erase or blur those lines, but to embrace and to promote masculinity and femininity. So on the one hand, every human being has both qualities, and on the other hand, our anatomy differentiates us, and that differentiation is important. It brings equilibrium and balance to the world. Can it be from a Torah view? When a man says to me, if a woman were to say to you, I feel like I'm stuck. I'm a man stuck in a woman's body. I'm a woman stuck in a man's body. Is that nonsense? Is it a psychiatric disorder? From a Torah point of view, do we write that person off as a crazy person, as a perverted, distorted, deviant person? Is there any room for legitimacy of that feeling? So I must share with you, and I was shocked when I first saw this, that we do have allusions, particularly in Kabbalistic literature, for this notion, based on reincarnation, of having an opposite gender soul in an opposite gender body. The Kaf HaChaim, Rav Yaakov Chaim Sofer of Baghdad, writes, Da ki ha'adam afa pishu zachar yesh minei aveiro shegormem lo lizapech v'lios nekeva. A person could be born a male, but there are certain violations that he can do in which God will exchange his soul so that his soul will become female. V'inyan echad hu inyan mishkav zachar mida keneged midom is galga v'nasa nekeva. That if in a last lifetime the individual violated homosexuality, then it's possible they will be reincarnated, that soul, in the opposite gender body as part of their tikkun. I'm not a Kabbalist. My point in sharing this with you is not truly to explain it to you. I am not capable of explaining it to you. I'm not competent to explain it to you. But there's some notion that if one has blurred their own gender difference in their lifetime, then in a reincarnated state, in a Gilgul, they may God to be misaken, to repair the damage of having made the wrong choice in a gender in one lifetime. God can bring back that soul and place it in the opposite gender body, and living with that struggle could be the tikkun, the repair that their soul needs. I don't mean to suggest to anyone who's struggling with transgender, you deserve this, you made bad choices in another lifetime, you're suffering because God is punishing you. God forbid, I'm not suggesting that. I'm not endorsing that. I'm simply sharing with you this comment of the Kaf HaChaim, if for no other reason than to see that within our own rabbinic literature, we have reference to the concept of being one gender of a soul in the presence in another gender body. You see it also in the Od Yosef Chai, Rav Yosef Chaim of Baghdad, source number 13. He writes, he goes so far as to suggest, remember the story of Tamar and Yehuda? Tamar has a husband, he dies without leaving her a child, she wants to have a child from his brother, but the brother spills his seed, refuses to impregnate, so Yehuda comes thinking Tamar is a prostitute. We all know the story. Says Rav Chaim Yosef, Rav Yosef Chaim of Baghdad, start from the first underline. He says there are certain things that you can do where you were born a male in one life, but you decided to forfeit your masculinity and you lived a feminine life. So God says, okay, in your next life you come back a female in a male body. You made that choice for yourself. That's what he says. Tamar, he says, really was a man. Tamar had the soul of a man. So how did she conceive and give birth from Yehuda if she had the soul of a man? Not only was Tamar a man, Yehuda was a woman. Yehuda had the soul of a woman. And the combination of the two, their two souls became the combination of man and male and female, even if their bodies were the opposite, and that yielded a child. Again, do I understand it? Can I explain it? No. Why am I sharing it? To sensitize us that within our own rabbinic literature, and to validate somebody who says, I can't help but feel I am the opposite gender stuck in a body, they're not necessarily, it might be a psychiatric disorder, that psychiatrist knows a lot more than I do, but within our own rabbinic literature, there is a reference to it. There is a reference to this concept. Is a woman in a man's body obligated to observe men's mitzvahs? Some of the questions we're going to discuss. So the Bnei Aaron and Shar HaGilgulim, Rav Shimon Agassi, source number 14, writes, Hasha yesh lehistapek. By the way, again, if you think this is a 21st century problem, these sources I've been sharing with you are from the 19th, 20th century. We'll see some from even earlier. Hasha yesh lehistapek. Benashim zu shel ish nizgalgala. Neshama zu shel ish nizgalgala ki isha im nifgemasi kafarchat harosh. And so on. He says, based on the sources I just shared with you previously, if it's true, Kabbalistically, you could have a female soul in a male body and a male soul in a female body. If Kabbalistically that could be true, he wonders, and he leaves it as a doubt, as a suffix, what's the halachic status of such a person? Is a female soul in a male body allowed to, for example, shave? We know that a man can't take a razor to his face. But if it's really a female soul, could that female soul shave her male face? Because really it's a female soul. My point is to share with you this wonder. If Kabbalistically it's true to have opposite gender and opposite bodies, then what are the halachic consequences and ramifications of such a thing? So we are living in a time, what is the Torah perspective? We are living in a time which has been described to some as Torah Tapuchos. There's an entire sefer, a thick sefer, I have it. It's written on the issue of transgender in halacha. It's called Dor Tapuchos. Where did he get that from? Source 15, a pasuk in Azinu in Dvarim. Ki Dor Tapuchos Hema, Banim Lo Emun Bam. God says, I will hide my face from them and see what their end will be. They are a generation that is upside down. Children whose upbringing is not in them. And the author of this sefer writes, gives it the name, Dor Tapuchos. We're living in an upside down generation. So I want to share with you, he has it in his sefer and many others, 8 reasons why such surgery is prohibited. Even if there is an acknowledgement of validation that maybe there can be the sense of being the wrong gender in the wrong body, maybe, perhaps it is a psychiatric disorder, maybe Kabbalistically we can validate such a feeling could be present. Is such surgery permissible? Or does one have to say, I am stuck with the anatomy I was given. I am defined by my chromosomes. The surgery is forbidden. The halacha is clear. Unequivocally, the halacha is clear universally. That transgender surgery, sexual reassignment surgery, is forbidden. It's forbidden biblically, and it's forbidden for at least 8 reasons. Number 1, Torah tells us in Vayikra, there's a prohibition of squeezing, crushing, tearing, cutting one's genitalia. One is not allowed to intentionally create a state of sirus, a state of, what's the word I'm looking for? Not infertility, but a person without genitalia is a eunuch, a state of impotency. One is forbidden from intentionally creating it. To cut off one's genitalia is a direct violation. This is quoted in Shulchan Aruch and Evan Ezer. Hamisaris es hamakeva bein ba'adam bein b'shar minim pater aval aser. Not only is it true for men, but it's true for women as well. To surgically change one's genitalia, one's anatomy, is a prohibition. Even before the surgery is done, dressing as the opposite. We used to call it transvestite. Today it's more politely called transgender. But it is also a biblical prohibition. Source 19. Lo yekli gever al isha v'lo yilbash gever simlas isha. You're not allowed to dress as the opposite. And why is that? The Mefarshim and the commentaries all point out. It comes back to that Gemara in Baba Basra. Because God created a world that is differentiated. We have masculinity and we have femininity. And to have equilibrium in the world, to have balance in the world, we need both. To blur those lines where men are presenting as women and women are presenting as men erases those significant and critical differences. And therefore we have a biblical prohibition against cross-dressing. One is forbidden. That real life test, the RLT, where one dresses as the opposite, is a biblical prohibition. Number 3, source 20, the Gemara in Baba Basra, that we have a prohibition of chavala. One is forbidden from chavala. You are not allowed to damage yourself. You can't. Not only do we have a prohibition of chavala, I can't punch you and create a bruise. I can't stab you and draw blood. I'm not allowed to damage you. I'm not allowed to damage your property. And I'm not allowed to damage your being, your body. That prohibition. We spoke about this, I gave a share a bunch of years ago on boxing. There's a rich history of Jews, I guess pun intended, of Jews in boxing. But the question is, what is the Jewish perspective of boxing? There are actually tshuvas written about it. Men who asked if they... I just saw recently a rabbi won an MMA title. Anyone see that? Mixed martial arts, or a rabbi was competing in the ring. This is a big halacha question. If you're a Jew, are you allowed to box? One of the questions is, not only are you allowed to punch the other guy, but can you allow yourself to be punched? Chova ba'atzmo. Are you allowed to damage yourself? So we know that the prohibition of damaging is waived for medicinal purposes. The diabetic who has to prick himself multiple times a day in order to measure his blood glucose, of course is allowed to do that. There's no prohibition. But to prick yourself because you want to sign in blood with your best friend is a prohibition of chavala, choma ba'atzmo. You're not allowed to for no reason at all. So biblical prohibition number 3, why the surgery is prohibited, is chova ba'atzmo. I'll tell you, the individual from our community who underwent the surgery was again somewhat learned, and he argued, let's say a girl feels that she has a feature which is grotesque, and she's worried she's not going to get married because she has a really big nose. So she wants to get plastic surgery. She'll tell everyone it was a deviated septum, because that's the Jewish way, but she wanted to have plastic surgery. in order to be attractive. So Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked this question, and Rav Moshe proved from a Tosfos that psychological pain is equivalent to a physical condition, and the prohibition of chovel ba'atzmo, the prohibition of hurting yourself, is waived in light of the psychological pain. So this individual came to me and he said, if a woman is allowed to shorten her nose because it's causing her pain, it's not a violation of chovel ba'atzmo, then why can't I shorten something else because it's causing me great pain psychologically? Again, it was a good chap. It was a good chap. But the poskim say, reason number three why the surgery is prohibited is because of chaval. Reason number four, pasuk in Devarim, neshmartem od lenafshoseichem, which we understand this pasuk different in the context in which it appears, to mean we have an obligation to preserve one's health. There are health risks involved in the sexual reassignment surgery. One is not allowed to electively put themselves in a position to undergo health risks, even if they're negligible. Their poskim will talk about the question of, can you be induced labor? Now, if your doctor tells you I need to induce labor because it's medically warranted, then of course you're allowed to. But let's say you say, well, my birthday is March 3rd and I want this kid to be born on my birthday, so I'm going to induce for March 3rd. So there are tshuvas, the Ber Moshe, Moshe Stern, and others who say you're not allowed to, because childbirth can be fatal, is risky. So when you go into it naturally, that's what God wants. If you need to be induced into it, it's medically warranted, that's what's correct. But to choose to put yourself into that condition when it's not warranted is a prohibition. So this, v'nishmartim ma'od l'nafshoseichem, you cannot undergo elective surgery which has with it risks, health risks, which can be life-threatening if it's not medically mandated, if it is elective. There are prohibitions of lifnei iver here. People may relate to you as the opposite gender. People may flirt with you, seek to date with you, and other things which could result from their being, having the misimpression of being the opposite gender. Lastly, source 23. There is a prohibition, and this is a sensitive one. There's a notion of chilul Hashem. If we believe that the Torah view is that the anatomy that we have is the anatomy we're meant to be, that the chromosomes we have define our gender, to begin to cross-dress, to begin to advocate for a transgender community, to begin to embrace and celebrate the secular world's notion of these issues, the Torah has a very different view of, it can lead to a great chilul Hashem. It's not our way. It can lead to a great chilul Hashem. Source 24, the Gemara in Shabbos Nun Gimel. Another reason. The Torah there tells us there is a concept. The Torah says there was an individual who was able to, there was a miracle performed on his behalf. Listen to this story. An individual whose wife passed away, and left him a young child who was still nursing, but he didn't have the money to pay somebody to nurse. They didn't sell formula in those days. A miracle occurred, and this man grew two breasts. A miracle occurred and he was able to nurse his child. I don't know, could you do it in shul? That would be a question that's being addressed today. Nursing and shul is a big talk. So could the man who miraculously grew breast nurse and shul? I don't know. Amar of Yosef. So the Gemara comments, Bo re kama gadol adam zeh. See how great this man is. Naslo neska zeh. Wow! God reversed the rules of nature. A miracle occurred. Wow, what a righteous man he must be for a miracle to occur. But that's not the end of the Gemara. Amar lo abai, no, adaraba. Kama garua adam zeh. How inferior this person is, Shenishtanu lo sidrei bereishis, that the natural order was changed on his behalf. We have a natural order, we have the way the world is created, we have the world way that the world is clearly designed to function and to have a sense of continuity, and to violate that is not something which is laudable, but to violate that is something which is prohibited. So what we've seen so far is, to summarize, what we've seen so far is that there is, at least in Kabbalistic literature, the notion of a feeling of being stuck the opposite gender in the other gender's body. Does that validate having surgery? No. There are at least 8 biblical reasons why such surgery is categorically prohibited. Sexual reassignment surgery is against the Torah, it's usur, it is prohibited. But the question that remains is, what's the halachic status of someone who underwent it anyway? Somebody who says, I'm either going to kill myself or have the surgery. I spent 60 plus years, 6 decades trying to change the soul unsuccessfully. I have to change my body or I'm going to die. And nebuch lo aleinu, that person is in excruciating pain. And they undergo that surgery without the consent or the endorsement of a posek or a rabbi. What's their halachic status? Are they in fact a man or a woman? Do we define gender by chromosomes or anatomy? By external or internal? What's the halachic status? So this is not a new question. We have the Torah tells us that zachar lo tishkav mishkavei isha toivahi. We have the biblical prohibition of a homosexual act. It's a separate discussion, the notion of homosexuality. The Torah does not recognize a noun. There's no such thing as a homosexual. There's only the verb. What the Torah prohibits is the act of homosexuality. We don't define people by their sexuality. There's no noun. Torah says, lo sishkav mishkavei isha. It's a verb. You're not allowed to engage in the homosexual act. The Ibn Ezra, in the 11th century, quotes Rabbeinu Hananel, source 26, who says, what would be, this was imaginary in the 11th century, what would be if a man could have surgery to have the anatomy of a woman, and then that woman slept with a man, would it be a prohibition of Mishkav Zachar? Would it be a prohibition of homosexuality? And he says, absolutely. Even if one changes the external anatomy, nevertheless, if one is born a man and sleeps with a man, it would be a prohibition of homosexuality. What's the halachic identity? So here we have Rav Eliezer Waldenberg, the Tzitz Eliezer, who has one opinion, essentially, and everyone else who are lined up on the opposite side. Now, the Tzitz Eliezer was dealing with the following case, not of transgender, but the Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Waldenberg, who was the posek of Shari Tzedek Hospital, a great posek in Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, in the 20th century, the beginning of the 21st, he had the following case. He was dealing with a baby that had female external genitalia, but it was discovered had gonads that had not dropped, and had male chromosomes. And the parents wanted to do surgery to remove the gonads and to give this child a female status. And the Tzitz Eliezer's conclusion was that that was perfectly permissible because gender is defined by external anatomy, not by chromosomes. So since externally there was female genitalia, even if internally there were beitzim that did not drop, nevertheless, that didn't emerge, they could be removed and the child could be defined by the external genitalia. If you look at the last paragraph of his tshuva, al koponim ein laze shaychus la'atzim bitzua nituach sh'omer daiti nota shemutu levatzea zos. One is allowed to do the surgery. The gender is defined by anatomy, by external genitalia. That is the position of the Tzitz Eliezer. He says it in a few tshuvas, but again, not addressing outright transgender or sexual reassignment surgery, more in the cases of ambiguous genitalia. He says that halacha sees one's genetics as determined by their anatomy. Now again, just to set this up, you have to understand that the nafkaminas, the consequences are great. If a man becomes a woman, are they still obligated in time-bound mitzvahs? If a man becomes a woman, where do they sit? Which side of the machitza in a shul that they attend? If a man becomes a woman, and the man was previously married, must he give his wife a get? Or are they automatically considered no longer married? If a woman becomes a man, does she need a bris on the result of the plastic surgery that was created? Does she automatically become obligated in time-bound mitzvahs? There are many differences that come up, and others, in a consequence to this question. What is the halachic status? So the Tzitz Eliezer says, the halachic status is based on anatomy. Almost all or all of the poskim that I saw, here's one example, the Yaskel Avdi Rav Avadya Hadaya says that no, halacha sees gender as defined by chromosomes, not by anatomy. You could do whatever you want to do on the body on the outside, give one of each, two of each, zero, change it over. You could do whatever you want on the outside, but your status will never change from what your chromosomes say you are. What your chromosomes say you are decides who you are. That's the opinion of the other poskim. Now, in the Tzitz Eliezer's defense, there's one other posek who I saw his name quoted. I didn't see it directly inside. Rav Neventzal, the Rav of the old city of Yerushalayim, was quoted by Rabbi Gideon Weitzman of Machon Pua in an article, Rav Neventzel is telling him that he agrees it's the anatomy, and his proof is Chazal never had a way of seeing the chromosomes. In the time of the Gemara, in the time of Chazal, you couldn't do a blood test that you saw chromosomes. So all you had, in the Dayan in Lamasha in Avros, all you had was what you can see. And therefore, clearly gender had to be defined by anatomy. And that's Rav Neventzel's argument in favor of the Tzitz Eliezer. But again, the majority of halachic authorities say it's not true, particularly now that we can determine chromosomes. It is chromosomes that determine gender. It is not anatomy. Must one get divorced? The question I just raised, here's one example. So the Shut Lev Aryeh brings this up, Dayan Aryeh Lev Grosnas, a London Basin. Source number 30. Hashailu l'chora b'mahus ha'eter d'misas ha'bal, imu mitam she'ein bal, o mitam she'etzim ha'misa po'a chalos heter. He says it's going to, it'll be decided based on the following. When a man dies, his wife can remarry. She obviously doesn't need a get. Why? Is it because by dying, she no longer has a husband? Or is it somehow the death frees her? The death removes the link, the bond that marriage had created. What's the difference in the way you understand why death leaves the woman allowed to remarry? If her husband had a sex change operation. If the reason is because there's no longer a husband, well, here too, there's no longer a husband. If the reason is that death somehow is what emancipates her, then there was not a death. So he says it's a suffix. He's not sure. Do you still need a get if your husband is still alive? He's just no longer capable of being a husband because, at least externally, he became a woman. He says, he quotes some that say that a man who becomes a woman remains halachically a man. We follow chromosomes, which means that his wife, without a get, if she were to remarry, would be practicing infidelity, would be an eshes ish, and a get needs to be given. And he therefore says, concludes, at least me suffik, at least me doubt, in kain b'inyanenu mistama osa gam ken haidei zrikas harmonim v'nituach hu be'em es zachar v'afilo androgon es gam ken ishto tzricha get me suffik. He says a get should be different. Other poskim say no. If someone has the sex change operation, however you define them halachically, there's no longer that husband. And therefore a get does not need to be given anymore. This is a question in halacha. Rav Yigal Spurn, in an article in Tchumen, source 31, points out, even Rav Eliezer Waldenberg, even the Tzitz Eliezer, who says that gender is defined by anatomy and validates sexual reassignment surgery, that the result is the opposite gender, still he does not condone the surgery. Tzitz Eliezer was responding, what would be the halachic status after surgery were done? But he argues in this article in Tchumen that the Tzitz Eliezer would never still endorse the surgery, that the surgery would remain prohibited. What about the argument? Should surgery be permitted to relieve psychological pain? We mentioned that Rav Moshe's Matir, plastic surgery, rhinoplasty, because a person feels psychologically inferior, even though there's chavalah involved, and even though there's v'nishmartim, risking your life, nevertheless, based on Tosfos, psychological pain is the equivalent to physical pain, and therefore it's allowed. Would you say that here? So in that article in Tchumen, he says, absolutely not. This is not a cosmetic surgery. This is not a minor detail. This major surgery of sexual transformation is something so significant that even to relieve psychological pain cannot be allowed. The Sefer Dor Tapuchos that I mentioned to you raises, what if surgery was before conversion? If the moment the person became a Jew, would you go by how they became a Jew? What if the surgery were when the person was a minor? Would you say they became a bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah as their new gender, now they should be accepted as their new gender? These are some of the questions that have arisen. What bracha does such a person say in the morning? Rav Chaim Palagi addresses this question, source 33. A man becomes a woman. Should he say, Shelo asani isha? But now he's an isha. A woman becomes a man. Should she say, Shasani kirtzono, Shelo asani isha? What should she say? Rav Chaim Palagi addresses this and says, Ish kazeh shahaya isha tchila v'nepach liish nirali kashaomer bircha shachar eina omer shalo asani isha dekvar nases isha tchila bebeten imo v'otzio la'avir olam b'tzuras isha elam mevarech baruch atah Hashem alokeinu melech olam shahavchenu liish. Unbelievable. Rav Chaim Palagi introduces a new bracha. A new bracha in Birchas HaShachar. This woman became a man. She can't say the bracha of, thank God for not making me a woman. Shelo asani isha. She was born a woman. What should she say? Shehafchenu liish. And he goes on to have a discussion about this. Next, source 34, I brought you the table of contents to the Sefer Dor Tahuchos, just as an example that you can go through this table of contents to see some of the questions that this issue of transgender addresses. Should the woman who became a man wear tzitzis and wear tefillin? Can the man who became a woman, does the man who became a woman wear tefillin? If you say he's still a man, should he wear tefillin? It looks like a woman wearing tefillin. I don't want to get into the whole question. I already got myself in trouble with that one. Birchas HaShachar, as we just said, what bracha do you make? Can they be counted for a minyan? If a man becomes a woman, and now has the appearance anatomically of a woman, can they be counted for a minyan? Can they get an aliyah? Kaddish. Can they count towards zimun, bris milah? If a man becomes a woman and has hormonal injections to have a higher voice, are they now restricted by the laws of Kolisha? There's a community-wide event. Maybe that's the solution to our challenge across the denominations to make everybody happy. A transgender should sing HaTikvah. That will solve it. Is there a prohibition of Nagiyah? If you're a man, can you shake hands with a man who became a woman? A woman who became a man? Is there a prohibition of yichud? Are you allowed to be alone in a room with a man who became a woman who became a man? If they try to get married, is that marriage binding? Get. What's the status of the testimony? Are they kosher for edus? There's a litany of questions which in our lifetime we're going to have to address halachically, communally, on what is the status of somebody who has undergone this surgery. And here's what I want to leave you with this morning. Kind of comes full circle. The surgery is categorically prohibited. We reject this notion that halachically you can try to fix your body to match your soul. Even if kabbalistically we believe it's possible to have a soul different than the body, we reject this idea that you're repairing God's mistake. The anatomically, the way you were created, chromosomally, the way you were created, is the way we remain, with its challenges, with its issues, with its obstacles, with its excruciating pain. We as a community should be there to support such an individual with sensitivity and with love and with concern. But the surgery, I want to be clear, is categorically prohibited. If one had the surgery, Tzitz Eliezer says, we follow the anatomy. All the poskim say, we follow the chromosomes. The nafkaminas, the practical differences we saw, there are many. When I asked this prominent posik, where should the individual who had the surgery sit? Should we allow them in the shul? That was the first question. There were many people who came to me and said, I won't sit in shul with this deviant. And the posik said to me, this was his language, you have a mitzvah to be mekarev him, not to be merachik him. If the individual wants to remain an observant Jew, listen, so this individual made a mistake having the surgery. Said to me, do you let people who drive to shul come to shul? You let people who eat non-kosher come to shul? You let people who speak Lashon Hara come to shul? You let people who come to shul? You let people who called something a business expense when they had lunch with their friend on their income taxes come to shul? So this individual too can come to shul. They made a mistake. If we rejected everyone who made a mistake coming to shul, we'd have very empty shuls. We wouldn't have a minyan. He said, this individual too can come to shul. I said, where do they sit? So he said they should sit on the, even though he felt halachically they have the status of a man, they should sit on the women's side of the machitza, because since they have the appearance of a woman and they're attracted to men, they should sit on the woman's side of the machitza. And we should be sensitive enough to say that while we don't endorse or condone the surgery, while we may even believe it's a psychiatric condition, would we reject the bulimic anorexic person from coming to shul just because their perception doesn't match reality? Why should we reject the individual who's struggling with this? And this is the sentiment you see in a few tshuvas. In source 35, in an article in Hamaor, Rabbi Chananya Yom Tov Lipa Teitelbaum writes, don't give up on the transgender, be makarev him or her. Mitzad avaryanim einam gruam mimumar v'anosei nashim ba'aveira. You're going to let somebody who married a woman they shouldn't, a kohen marries a divorcee, you're letting them come to shul? Somebody's intermarried, you're going to let them come to shul? He says, I don't see why this person should be rejected. We need to do what we can in order to reach out to them and allow them in every other area of life to live an observant, meaningful, richly Jewish life. You see this as well in Source 36. Tshuvas v'shavu refei, Rav Rafal Efres. He writes that he in fact heard this from the Tzitz Eliezer himself. Achar kach sha'alti es pi agon Rav Eliezer of Oldenburg. Sha'amar li sh'mikol makom tzrichim l'karva l'yahadus b'chol ma de'efsher. You should be mekar of this person in every capacity that we can. Rav Yaakov Emden feels that this is such deviant behavior, we should publicly shame them and publicize them and drive them away. But Rav Yaakov Emden was living in a very different time and a very different society. He was not living in our world where our culture is pointing in very different directions. So in summary, we're living in a dor tapuchos. In summary, we're living in a time where Bruce Jenner has made a circus act out of a very sensitive subject. We would be doing a disservice to people who are suffering excruciating pain by calling them names, dismissing, marginalizing them. We need to approach the issue and the topic with tremendous sensitivity to realize that anyone suffering with this, the psychiatrist called this disorder of assumption, did not invite it, did not welcome it, and would give anything in the world not to have it. And therefore, we should encourage people to follow the halacha, not have the surgery. An individual who has the surgery, ask your local rabbi what the halachic status of that person is. Do we follow Tzitz Eliezer or do we follow the other poskim? But ultimately, we should have a sensitivity and we should try to navigate our way through this increasingly cloudy world and dark world we live in. It's a very, very fine line to show that sensitivity, but make very clear that Torah values are not the values of the world. Such an individual does not deserve to be celebrated publicly for their bravery and for their courage, and we welcome them whoever they want to be and however they want to be, and everything is so wonderful. It's not so simple. These choices have impacts on our society, they have impacts on the concepts of family, they have impacts on our children, and the Torah has very clear views. And so we need to maintain and preserve our very distinct Torah perspective on this issue, but implement it with great sensitivity, with love, care, and with concern. Have a fantastic day. Thank you.